It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Kent Backus. Kent is Executive Director, Government Affairs, National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Kent, hey, it's great to see you.
Good to see you as always.
And Kent is a native Texan, but how many years have you been in D.C. now?
My family will tell you I've been here way too long, and I tend to agree with them on that, but going on almost 20 years now.
Once you get here, though, have you found you can make a difference? And has that been part of the reason you've stayed?
I think it takes, you have to have a special kind of interest to want to stay here. A lot of people will come here for just, a few months, maybe a couple of years. And then there are those of us who tend to like it a little bit more and enough to kind of take the punishment of living in Washington and end up staying here and making a career out of this. But D.C. is it's never a boring place. There's so many things that are happening. I mean, this is the center of the free world, so all the important decisions are made here. For me, it's fun because I get to I get to work on some very important issues. I get to represent a great industry. Some of the best people I've ever met are outside of Washington, and it's an honor to represent them here. And then just to get to spend time on issues like international trade that I find is very fascinating, very challenging. And so to be able to do that, it makes it a lot easier to get up every day and deal with the traffic and deal with all the issues that D.C. provides here in the swamp. But again, it's a challenging position, but it's also a lot of fun at times.
You mentioned the getting up in the morning. I actually have this on, I believe I'm safe in saying you put in a lot of hours, many nights where you'll be up here and it's dark when you leave. Maybe it's dark when you come in. How important is it for producers, whether we're talking about the livestock industries or row crops or general ag, how important is it to have a voice in D.C.?
Well, there are conversations that happen here all the time, whether it's in the different agencies or on Capitol Hill, and it's people that are talking about your industry and your operation, whether you're aware of it or not. You need to have eyes and ears here. You need to have someone who is speaking on your behalf and is speaking at your direction. And, I think a lot of people make that mistake. We don't decide what issues we're going to engage on and when. We have the tools provided from our members and from the playbook that they give us. That's all grassroots-driven and member policy that is clearly set, and it's our job to go implement it. And even in that, we consult with our members constantly. So I think it's important to remember that you need to have someone here who can be that voice, who can be in the room, because even though we live in a world with a lot of virtual meetings, there's still not a lot of transparency at times. And that's why you need somebody at the table who can speak on your behalf.
It's one thing to speak on the behalf of producers in Washington, D.C., but it's another thing to have to travel across the Atlantic to do that. You actually had the opportunity to go to the European Union. Tell us about that.
So, most of the time we spend here is going to be in Washington. It's going to be dealing with our own agencies. But the opportunity to go abroad and to engage with foreign governments on their soil is a tremendous challenge. If you think that the U.S. government is complicated, the European Union, especially the European Commission, is vastly more complicated. The levels of bureaucracy, just the amount of red tape that they have is astounding. And so we know that there are a lot of conversations that are happening there about cattle production, about sustainable cattle production, about the science behind that, but also animal welfare, animal health, food safety. And the European Union, given the size of their market, they are able to dictate terms of trade because of the influence they have. And so we've decided to engage with them, to go to them directly and have those face-to-face conversations, not as trade negotiations like we've had in the previous years when we were trying to build a trade agreement, but to really talk about the issues themselves, to talk about what it means to have a sustainable production practice, what goes behind climate metrics, and how much science should actually play a role in that. Now, it's a very different approach to what we have, because here in the United States, we believe in, you know, risk-based analysis. We believe in a lot of science-driven policies. In the European Union, science is one factor. There are a lot of other social factors that go into that that can make it very subjective at times. So that's where you see a lot of influence from NGOs, from a lot of special interest groups that do not believe in the science-based production practices we have here. So we can, you know, keep our head in the sand and just, you know, pretend like we're going to be able to operate in a world where the EU is dictating these terms, or we can engage with them and try to correct that narrative and actually have, you know, some important debates and discussions about the science. That's what NCBA is going to continue to do. We're headed back over there in just a few weeks. We're going to be meeting with a lot of different people. We're going to be meeting with other stakeholders because there are a lot of agricultural groups over there that would like to be able to do what we do. And they want to, they need a little direction, but they also just need someone to know that they're not alone. And so producers are facing very similar pressures over there that we have been here. We have a pretty good success rate in engaging with our government and correcting the narrative. And so I think we have a lot to offer. Look forward to engaging with them here very soon.
I think one thing we really can't comprehend here in the U.S. is we hear the word shaming thrown around a lot, but we really can't understand some of the shaming that comes along with food choices outside of the U.S., can we?
Well, I think that's something that's it is unique outside of the U.S. is the fact that you have such growth in some of the plant-based proteins, not because people truly believe in the health benefits. It's because there's a social stigma that comes with eating meat. There are a lot of, you know, anti-meat groups that are out there. A lot of the animal activist groups have also engaged on that to try to shame consumers away from eating meat. And you're talking about a European continent where you have so many different cultures where meat is a central part of the diet. It's part of the culture. It's celebrated. If it's, you know, beef, pork, dairy, chicken, you know, all of these are you know, animal-based commodities, and they each take a turn at getting shamed. We were surprised to hear that, you know, one of the biggest issues is the fact that a lot of young people in the EU, if you have a group of friends that are out and somebody decides to order a burger at lunch or you know, a roast beef sandwich or something like that, that their friends may give them grief for actually doing that. So, you know, they were that's a reality that they face. And in these meetings, it was clearly made to us. They're like, we want to know how you're able to avoid this in the U.S. How is this not an issue where you are? And we kind of looked at each other because this is not a common practice here. You may get a few people occasionally. You know, it's you know, if you have a friend that's a vegan, they'll remind you of that every time that they get a chance. But normally, you don't hear about this often. So we looked at them and said, well, you know, one of the key things that we do in the U.S. is we promote our product. We talk about it positively to consumers. We do that through the Beef Checkoff. We do that through a lot of different promotional activities, both at the state and national levels, also at the local levels. We engage with consumers so that they can know exactly how their food's being produced and we earn their trust. But yeah, 40 years of investing in producing and 40 years of investing in promoting U.S. beef has certainly paid off. It's not only paid off here domestically, it's also something that's benefited us tremendously in the international market. When you look at the work that we do through the U.S. Meat Export Federation, some of our other stakeholders, we are able to take that American story about our producers, about the quality, the safety of our product, and take that to markets where English is not their first language and where they don't know a lot about American culture, but they trust that U.S. brand. They trust you know, the image behind that. That takes a lot of commitment. I think we lead the world in that. We're one of the, you know, one of the strongest advocates of promoting our product in other markets. You know, NCBA is a big supporter of, you know, some of the funding that we're able to use promotional funding through USDA, some of that through the you know, the foreign market development funds, where we're seeing, you know, return on investment of 25 to 1 in some cases. I mean, there's a lot of good things that we do. I think the Europeans want to look at what we're doing, how they can learn from that, how they can build demand in their own markets. But this is just one conversation of many that we're going to have. If it's in addition to just promoting the sustainable aspects of our production, we're also going to continue to talk about all of the things that we do on the animal health side, on food safety, the role of technology in food production in securing that beef supply for all consumers.
So we talk about the European Union, but we're not talking about the United Kingdom because of Brexit. Mm-hmm. They've left, and now that's a whole nother opportunity. Is the discussions with the UK just really an extension of dealing with the EU, or do you really find that the UK has more of an autonomous and a different approach to how they want to do things?
Well, the United Kingdom is definitely European, but they are very independent. They are setting their own standards, and they are very proud of that fact. They're going to continue to develop all of their own rules and regulations, but they've lived under that mindset with the EU for decades. So shifting away from that is going to take some time. The European Union is also their biggest export market. So if they want to be able to trade with their biggest customers, then they're going to have to produce standards that will allow them to trade in the EU. At the same time, you know, they are open to trading with the United States. They're open to trading with other places where those EU standards just don't apply. So I think that we have an important opportunity here to engage directly with them. A lot of the same conversations we were having with the European Commission, we also had in London with relevant agencies. And I think that they are certainly more open-minded to technology in food production. I think they see the importance of the efficiencies provided by those technologies, especially in reaching some of our climate goals, but also just in securing food safety and animal health. So I think we still need to do a lot of work to win over the public. I think that their regulators, I think their government certainly sees the importance of the science behind the production standards that we have. But we're going to have to win over the public, and that's going to take, again, more investment, more commitment from us to tell that story and to correct that narrative.
I had originally thought I would ask you about what trade agreements the U.S. was working on, but as you're talking and you're explaining this, it really gives me the idea that maybe opening up some markets will be happening before we officially sit down at a negotiation table to work out a free trade agreement. Is that a safe assumption to throw in there?
Yeah, I think that, you know, formal trade agreements, formal trade negotiations are still probably a couple of years away, just given the political realities we have here in the U.S. I don't think there's any question that the British government wants to engage in bilateral negotiations, not just dialogues, not just frameworks, but full-on negotiations. But our government's not prepared to do that yet. The Biden administration has taken a big step back. We need them to engage. We need them to continue to have those direct conversations because we see a lot of value in trading with some of our closest allies. But yes, I think there may be other ways outside of the traditional venues to be able to have more science-based trade, to take down some of the non-tariff barriers that are there. One of the big initiatives of this administration is the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework. And while there's no market access provisions included in the IPEF, it's the short version of that long title, while there's no market access provisions, there are a lot of conversations about sanitary and phytosanitary standards and addressing a lot of the technical barriers to trade that prevent us from really maximizing our access into some key Asian markets. I think we're going to have more of those conversations over the next couple of years. I hope that results in expanded market access. But whatever the venue, whatever the opportunity, NCBA is going to engage because we know these conversations are happening. And if we're not at the table, we're on the menu.
Farm bill. have to figure out a way to work Farm Bill into here. And there's actually trade mechanisms, if you will, written into the Farm Bill. So I guess the question here is, Farm Bill moving forward, what do you see?
Well, the Farm Bill, I think, is going to be the topic of the year. It's obviously, it'll be the focus of everyone. I think even before the new Congress gets here, everybody's already talking about Farm Bill and what their priorities will be. For us, yes, we do see some opportunities in the Farm Bill, but not necessarily from a trade negotiating side or building in any trade policies there. We see it as an opportunity to secure our own herd, to secure the safety of our own beef supply. One of the best ways to do that is to make sure that we have a robust, fully funded foot-mouth disease vaccine bank. But not only that, we need to make sure that we have all the testing kits that we need. We need to make sure that we have all of the preparedness efforts fully funded so that we're able to respond if and when an unfortunate outbreak would occur. I think this is very timely and critically important simply because we're seeing foot and mouth disease spread all over Southeast Asia. It's threatening to enter into the Australian market. I think we're also seeing it in parts of Africa, and it is starting to spread through South America. So this is something we all need to pay attention to, and this is something that is worth every penny when it comes to defense, and this is key in securing our national herd.
Kent, great to see you. Thanks for your time and all your work. If we want to keep up with what's happening at NCBA, how do we do that?
Best way to do that is to contact our office. We'll be happy to get you on our distribution list. We have multiple newsletters that go out. But one of the best ways to do it is to join NCBA. We need your voice. We need you to engage. So if you're not a member, I encourage you to become one because you need to be part of the voice, and we need your direction here in Washington, D.C.
Kent Backus is Executive Director of Government Affairs, National Cattlemen's Beef Association. From Washington, D.C., I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.